movie nerd. Can you dig it? In movie nerds we trust. What do you put your trust in? Your currency, gold, or the knowledge? The people are coming at you right now. Movie nerds that think they know one thing more than you do. Just one more thing, one more thing, one more thing that you do that makes them a nerd. Oh, sweet and sour.
Welcome to In Movie Nerds We Trust, the movie recommendation podcast for nights when you're not quite sure what to watch. I'm your host, Christopher James, and you guys know I'm not only a comedian, I'm a fan of comedy. So wherever you're at locally, go support those local shows. You're here in Salt Lake. Wise Guys always has some great shows. Of course, Sandy Station's putting on shows. Be sure to look for those. You can find those on our page as well as their pages as well. And you can get tickets for Wise Guys at wiseguyscomedy.com. So guys, have a really special episode for you today. First off, we have guest co-host Tim Drake.
Hey!
Hey, what are you, fucking Fonzie over here with that?
Yeah, that's what I learned from Henry Winkler.
Okay, that was
that entire blurry conversation that
I tried to sneak a picture
You tried to sneak a picture of. That's just me and blurry Henry Winkler. I can just say it's his ghost forever.
Oh, yeah, the ghost too, Henry Winkler.
Yeah, that was all we talked about. It's just like, you just have to give a good hey!
Hey, I always thought like he was Canadian when I was a kid when he did that. Like, hey! But he was too cool. He had a leather jacket. No one ever wanted to give him shit about it.
No.
Why would you give
shit to a guy with a leather jacket? He was cool. And he had a smoke rolled up in his
sleeve. He did. He smoked. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he was the overall badass.
That's true.
I've hit jukeboxes for years, and they're yet to play for me.
I still hit shit, and it works. And as soon as it works, I go, hey. And then all these millennials look at me like, what are you doing? Like, that's not cool at all.
We just have an iPod. We just push play.
Oh, yeah. Fuck those guys. But not only are we doing a hybrid episode today, we have a very special guest. He just released his album, Don't Wink the Bear, and also his brand new podcast on iTunes. Of course, Time Suck, Mr. Dan Cummins.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show, man.
I wish I had some Henry Winkler tidbits to add. I don't know him. I don't know the Fonz. I think of Arrested Development when I think of that guy, actually, now.
Yeah.
But I crack up where I was going to look up. My phone was off, but I was like, I was going to Google while you guys were talking about him. I'm like, I wonder how big he is. Because, well, you've been around. I feel like he's a tiny, tiny man,
right? He is.
Right?
He's shorter than I am.
Yeah.
And slight. Well, now he's gotten a little older. But back in the Fonz days, that always cracks me up about TV shows, where he was like a tough guy.
Yeah.
But he was a tough guy who was probably literally like a buck 30 or a buck 40. Like 5'6", 5'7". It's like, who is afraid of that guy? Like, how tiny are the other people in your community? Like, I feel like Henry Winkler in his like physical prime could maybe like dominate like a rural Filipino village of even smaller people than himself.
Well, the man can jump a shark. He can do anything. Right?
He was super cool.
You're in town doing Wise Guys, headlining Wise Guys.
Yeah, man, this is like one of the. I think this is the club I've worked the longest of any. Like Keith was I started in one of his. He had a little experiment kind of in Spokane at one point when he was. Starting, it wasn't called Wise Guys then. It was called Laughs. I think it was him and maybe Dave Dennison out of Seattle might have been partnered with it. And then Dave Dennison kept the name, and then Keith started Wise Guys. But at one time he had like a little weekend room, and so it was like I think Keith saw me do a guest set, and I was like 2 weeks into comedy.
Oh shit!
And then Nick Tyson, a friend of his up there in Spokane, recommended me to this club. But I first came down. I don't know, to do like some summer headlining things. I was only like 2 or 3 years in. But at that time, like Keith was, the club was also in its infancy. And so it was easier to get a headlining spot there. Like the competition wasn't what it is now. And the money wasn't either. So it's like, you know, in the past, I'm like, God, why would you book me? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I was getting like $500 for like 6 shows or something, like something, you know, and it was the summer. But yeah, no, it's a really fun club. This is my first time in the new location.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's pretty nice, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's nice.
It has that town hall feel to it. Like I feel you know, waiting for Boo Radley to go up and start.
right. Yeah, that's true. It does. Yeah, it does have that.
Wait,
yeah,
when they had the Trump Bernie debate there, the Adomian and Troy.
Oh, Troy Conrad, right?
Not Conrad. I can never pronounce his last name. Amituk?
Oh, I don't know who it was.
So, but sounds when right. Yeah, when they had it there, it was like it was very fitting. It was very
it felt
very,
very
it was
political.
Very town hallish and
yeah.
But the new venue is fantastic. I've loved it. Yeah,
I started at the Wise Guys West Valley one.
That's the one I did the most. Even when I first started that gig I was telling about, it was at that location. They had that location for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you ever do the Charlie Square one?
Yes.
I loved that one. That was the one I had started at, Charlie Square one. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was a really, really fun one. Very intimate. Like, you didn't, 50 people in that Charlie Square one, and you felt like a rock star.
Yeah.
Like, and the acoustics were really good, and just the vibe of that place was really cool.
Yeah, that was a good one. It was great. I loved that one.
It's awesome. So you've had, a pretty good relationship with Keith going through the years.
Yeah, I have. We kind of, as he grew as a club owner, I kind of was grown as a comic, and, yeah, we've always just kind of gotten along. So, yeah, no, I like Keith a lot.
That's awesome. Plus, I mean, going through your, your comedy career, you've got, five CDs out now, right?
Yeah. I just completed, the old school record deal where it's, I think it helped me at first and then maybe it hurt me more recently, but it was five with Warner Brothers. And so,
Which is,
a weird, nobody does that. I mean, even at the time, five was a little long. Maybe three was more common, but five was what they wanted, and it was good. It was good for the first few, but then it's made it harder to get specials in a weird way lately because I am not free. Like most places, they want to produce it themselves or they want to have a production company. They do it or they want to do an exclusive. And when you're with a label, you're not free to do that because they want to own it. So they want their cut. So it was good, but I'm really happy about the new album, Don't Wake the Bear. The video will still come out. I'm still waiting to see they met Warner Brothers. They did suck with the video big time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they messed a whole bunch of stuff up. Like, it was so everything they could mess up, they did mess up. And then New Wave, Comedy Dynamics, who does a lot of them, they have taken it over. And I literally just saw their first cut last night after the shows, and finally it looks right. And now so now they'll be able to distribute it somewhere. I don't know where. But
sweet.
Is it the whole mess where they kind of move some of your bits around?
No,
I know I've heard of certain companies.
Comedy
that
Central
when they
has edit, stuff. Yeah, no, I had a flow to it. That was all I had. I was very involved. That was all intact. It was literally just stuff like shaky camera shots, color correction issues, and then just the type of edits, like going too quick between shots, then but a lot of things that show up on a quality control when a network's looking at, wanting to put it on there. They do this QC test, and it failed. And it was it failed on numerous kind of shot reasons. And then the audio was really not good. It was it's just the initial audio mastering was horrible. And then we had a guy redo it, and it sounds like when I was there. But I had guys do it that had a music background. They had never done comedy before, but they'd done a lot of live music. And they kind of I didn't mind shooting it that way so much, like you would a concert in a way. But they did the audio like you do a concert for a live band where, when the band's playing, you keep the audio real low on the audience, and then in between songs, you jack it up.
Right.
And they did that on the mix, and it just sounded fake. It sounded weirdly quiet.
Like you were bringing in the canned.
Yep. It sounded like a laugh track. And I was just I was so mad about it. And then I had this guy who did all my previous albums. He took the same raw footage, remastered it, and now it sounds like it did when you were there. Now I'm like, they wanted it to be too clean. I'm like, no. I'm like, you want to hear people laughing organically behind me as I'm talking and let it build and drop and stuff. Otherwise, it sounds so shitty.
Yeah, it's too tailored.
Yeah, it was way too clean where it sounds fake.
Yeah, and that album, it sounds fantastic. And you did it at the Depot here in Salt Lake.
Oh, thanks. You heard that's the final master, night and day compared to what it used to. I'm really happy now. So it was a long, annoying year and a half process, but the end result is I really like it. I had a buddy do the artwork for the album design. I really like the whole thing now, and it did well. That made me feel good. Even though there wasn't a special attached when it came out, it did on Billboard and stuff a lot better than my other albums. So that always feels good,
Nice.
And it was number one on the iTunes charts for a little while.
Yeah, a week and a half or so. Yeah. So that felt good. Yeah.
So I've loved, especially recently, seeing so many comics that I have followed for a while that continue to hit that number one spot as a new album comes out.
Yeah.
And even on Netflix, seeing some of those that pop up. And
this
year watching the Emmys, too, is like so many comics I've watched for so long that are all of a sudden finally getting their dues. And I was just like, this is a good time for comedy.
Well, I know,
seeing
right?
some of those albums and specials coming out.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of good opportunities out there. So, yeah, it's nice.
I love seeing all those Netflix original series stand-up specials coming out too, which has been pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'd love to see you do one of those.
I know. I that was the Oh, it's a long story, but there was we were trying to kind of like buy our way out of this contract for the last one. We didn't do it, but there was a different company involved where I in my gut, I feel like, dang it, if we would have just pulled that trigger and went with them, they have a great relationship with Netflix. I bet this one would have been a Netflix one.
Yeah.
There's still a small chance it might end up there just through New Wave, but now I'm like the show you saw last night is the beginning of the new hour. So I'm hoping I can tighten that up and then try to get a Netflix special that way. But Like I'm already like, if somebody listens to the album, they're not going to see any of the material from the album at the new show.
Sweet. I mean, the album was really good. I look for in every comedy album is if they tie the title of it into the album.
Oh, yeah.
Most of them, like 99% do.
Yeah, some make it abstract, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. I love that joke. Where
oh, thanks, man.
And I was like, oh, I didn't even have to think about it. What if it did mean like...
I do like starting with like a familiar thing, like in that one. That was a fun one to do where, you know, just to play on relationships or whatever like that, and you know, sex in a relationship, and then taking it to bear fucking.
Yeah,
like just I love like throwing those weird turns in to have the audience be like, what the hell,
which is good. And then you had you play that voicemail from your
from Lindsay,
which was so
a real voicemail. Yeah. yeah
no, I love that.
I think it's a good way, not just even in stand-up, but I've heard Key and Peele liken that that's what the kind of, you know, helped their success too, was you go down that path where everybody thinks it's the safe path, and then all of a sudden it's just a hard left turn where everyone's just like, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Not coming anywhere.
I know. It's exciting to try and take an audience in like a very unexpected direction. You know, like when you pull it off, it feels so much fun. Like I was actually surprised a bit. You saw last night. I couldn't believe the audience. I feel like they went with it more. There was that religion chunk.
Yeah.
Where like I go, it get really weird and dark. And it was like, I remember like I was thinking it was funny while I was writing it, but I was like, the most nervous I've maybe ever been about a bit to try that one out, because I'm like, this could end the show. This could just, like, the audience could be like, nope, we are done. We do not want to hear anything you have to say, because I get to, like grandma fucking and, like, real a weird thing about a popsicle stuck in your ass. And, like, it gets a lot of weird. It all makes sense in the narrative.
It pays off. It definitely pays off.
Nice.
There are very few jokes that'll hair comic do that'll forever stick with me, and that is one of them. So because there's always going to be that moment that somebody is going to say one of those lines to you, and you're going to be like, yep.
yeah.
So there's one kind of down that same realm of an awkward butthole experience where Chris D'Elia talks about in awkward small talk conversations, just reaching around and putting his finger in his butt.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Every single time I'm in an awkward conversation, people will be, they'll be just chatting my ear off, and I just kind of start to smirk, and they think that I'm laughing at something they're saying, and all that's going through my head is my hand reaching around.
Yep.
It's like that Pete Holmes McDonald's bit, where like he's at a party, and he's like, the best way to get out of it is like, you know, this party's McDonald's, and then everybody shuts up.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm loving it, and I'm going to say it on a date. Fucking just ruin the bad dates. I know, that's like a big fear of being a comedian. You like have a really good set, and you like wonder, like, this could fucking be good, or it could be fucking disastrous.
You mean like when the set's going along, and you try one of those weird ones?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because it's like, and especially when you're, I think, at least the way I do it, I don't... If the show is already like feeling like a little fragile, I'm not going to even try it. Like if it's an audience that I feel like I got to kind of stay on top of, I'm not going to really experiment with like a new piece. But then what does suck is like if you're having like a great show, you're like, I know I could just keep making this be a great show, or I could just selfishly throw in this bomb that'll make it an even better show, or ruin everyone who's paid to come here's night. Like, it's just going to bring it to a grinding halt. But it's so you definitely get, like, but kind of like those nerves in a good way. I like that. I like getting that, you know, 16 years in or whatever from the first time I did open mic to still get those butterflies.
Yeah.
And still get nervous. It feels good.
It kind of it's a cliche thing. You kind of still feel alive doing it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I love
feel
that
like you got to keep challenging yourself.
Yeah.
And just keep, for me, it's like a journey of just honesty, where it's like I'm past the point where I'm interested in trying to shock anyone for the sake of shock, like that I have no interest in that. But it's but I do want to get my real opinions out there. And it's funny, like I remember my son's old enough now where he was kind of asking me about career and stuff. And he was he's asked me, sometimes I work with Brian Regan, and Brian Regan's like really clean. And I was saying, well, that's part of, you know, definitely part of his success too, is like, he's able to like let kids come, and he's a very funny, obviously, dude. And then my son was like, well, why don't you be clean? Cause like, he knows that he can't listen to most of my stuff. And the stuff he can is like, there's still like a fair amount of profanity. And I just told him, I'm like, cause I don't fucking like that. You know, it's like, I like that. I have to do what I like. And then, just trying to explain like that artistic thing with him. And yeah, it's like, you know, part of me wishes like I just had more mainstream thoughts in a way, because it would be, I used to look down on some of those comics like, oh, they're being so safe, but I'm like, maybe they're not, maybe that's just who they are.
Yeah,
you know, like, that's, then it's silly to be edgy if you don't have those thoughts. But I genuinely have a lot of violent thoughts and like, and a lot of just hate of society. And like, you know, I'm not a fan of organized religion. Like those things. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who are very religious, and I respect them very much. But I can't pretend to not have my thoughts.
Yeah.
So that's, I think the longer you get it, you know, before I would always worry more about the audience and myself. I'm like, yeah, but what if so-and-so heard? Oh, but what if my father-in-law heard? Oh, what if that heard? And then after a while, you're like, well, why even do this if you can't?
Exactly.
It's like the regular conversation I have with my parents. I mean, growing up in... and of all places, Salt Lake, and I'm the black sheep of the family, where they're all very religious and conservative. And then, like, a book that I co-wrote a few years ago, mm-hmm. when that came out, I'll never forget the text I got from my brother the day that it came out, where he was just like, you know, I was going to tell people to buy your book, but I can't tell them to buy it with that kind of stuff in it. I'm like, that's fine. You don't need to tell them to buy it. But I'm not going to write a book that's this religious piece for you guys.
And for you.
When my new book comes out in another few months here, they're definitely not going to want to read that one, because it tackles it even more.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember who said it. It was a Nerdist episode I heard, to where this guy says that comedians, we're like the modern day martyrs. You know, we go ahead, we're the ones who are only like brave enough to say stuff. And yeah, people are going to backlash and stuff. Like the guy who got sued for a joke he did about...
Oh, like, in Canada or something. Yeah. But it is important. It's important, I think, to have that... It's funny because that guy's joke, I was just kind of like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah,
but like, but I think it is important to, you know, to be honest. I didn't do it last time, I don't think, but I have a part of one of my bits that I'm working on about just that, about how, like, you know, it's, kids can be so honest. Like, my kids are so honest, but adults get punished for honesty. And like, this is one of the few jobs where it's like, I'm rewarded for being brutal.
Yeah.
But you know, it is a rare thing. And so I do feel like it's an important responsibility. And that thing about, what's always bugged me about, when you're not religious and you're expressing your opinions around people who are, they take it personally.
Yeah.
Like, they're directly insulted. Where I'm like, so how is it okay for you to fill your house full of religious artifacts and all that, and talk about it all the time? And I almost got into like a really not fun argument with the radio DJ about this, where he was just, me saying I wasn't religious, like, upset him, you know, because he was, and he's, and then he goes, you'll change your mind when you're old, you know, and on your deathbed. I'm like, no, I won't. I go, my great grandpa, it was an atheist till the day he died, and so was everybody else on the side of the family, and it's like, never faltered on that, never like bitched out at the end. And then he made some comment that really like fired me up, but he's like, well, I guess you'll just be in hell with them then. And I'm like, no, I won't, because your God's fucking fake, asshole. You know, like if you want to say that shit to me, it's like, and I'll say, but it's like, and then of course, I'm sure he thinks like I was such a jerk. But it's crazy, like, and again, I have no problem with, like my mother-in-law is very Catholic, and she's, like, the most amazing woman I've maybe ever met. Like, she is, like, a saint. Like, she truly is. Like, my wife's mom is unbelievable. Doesn't care about conversations like this at all. She's not going to join in and be like, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, good job, guys. But she's not, she's not going to get weird or, like, judgy or anything, which to me is like truly a Christian. That's it. But then I have like my her ex-husband, like my father-in-law, he's the kind of guy. I made a joke on Facebook once, just on my Facebook page, my Facebook fan page, and Instagram, I think. And it wasn't a good joke, I'll admit that. It was something stupid about Easter. And I found a weird picture of these dead rabbits that were hanging off of a fence. And I said, it's Jesus Cottontail and his apostles. It's,
oh my God,
some weird reference to like how it's like, it's nonsensical that a rabbit is tied to the death of Jesus, you know, something nonsensical.
Yeah,
it wasn't that funny. It was like, it was just a stupid thing, but it was on my page.
Yeah,
he texts my wife and is like, I am very offended and very upset, you know, with Dan. And I'm like, dude, I didn't knock on your door. I didn't like go over to your house like, hey man, hey, open up. Hey, you know how you like Jesus? Well, check out this fucking picture of these rabbits. what do you think of that? That would be offensive if I push it. But it's like, I'm just amazed when people, they find it on your stuff, which is the social equivalent, I feel like, of your house, and they're angry with what you're doing in your house. It's like, well, then get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I posted a joke a couple of years ago on Twitter where I said, sitting in Sunday school, and they asked who our favorite fictional character was, and this time Jesus was not the answer they were looking for.
Oh, no, yeah.
And I get a call from my mom upset about that, and I was like, first off, when did you get Twitter? Second of all, why the fuck are you following me on Twitter?
Yeah.
I don't know what Timmy's up to.
Yeah.
That's funny.
There was that, and then this last year you saw the one. They started putting chocolate crosses in stores. And I took a picture of it, and I just captioned it with taking transubstantiation to the next level. And that just set off a tirade of people. And I was just like, if you can't laugh at that. Yeah.
And it's so silly. What cracks me up is I feel like, with this specifically, I feel like I know far more about Christianity than 95% of Christians.
Oh, yeah.
Because I grew up in a religious house, you know, like studied the Bible, took theology classes in college. Like, I actually am pretty familiar with the book and the belief system, and I'm amazed how many Christians are not.
Yeah.
And it's like that candy right there, it's like the candy itself should be offensive to you. It's like,
yeah, exactly. The joke.
And even the cross itself is such a weird thing where I get you're representing the sacrifice he made, but I always think of that Bill Hicks joke about, like, Bill Hicks had a great, great, great joke about people wearing the cross. He's like, do you really think Jesus would want to see that if he came back? He's like, to have that be the reminder of his legacy, the worst part of, you know, his life. He goes, that's like wearing such a good joke. He was like, that's like wearing a necklace with a little rifle on it. And going up to Jackie Onassis and just pointing out, just thinking of John, Jackie. Just thinking of John.
Holy fuck.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's the same thing.
I had an instance that set me off religious-wise. I had missionaries, because they like to knock on your door.
Yeah, they have to. Or, I mean, I said they have to, but they're pressured to.
So they knock, and I'm like, look, you know, I totally appreciate what you guys are doing. Yep. I'm not interested, you know.
Right.
I'm in here just trying to, you know, enjoy my day, you know. There's a cartoon on. I'm a grown man. I just want to watch cartoons. And
yeah.
Before I go back to real life. And they're like, oh, well, you know, your family's never going to love you unless you talk to us.
What?
Yeah.
That was a line they used?
That was a line that they used.
Wait, did your family send them?
No. Oh, my mom's
His family didn't love him already.
No, yeah. Which is exactly, I'm like, clearly you don't know my family, because no matter what I do, they're not going to love me.
That's such a weird line. Did you?
It is.
What was the follow-up logic? Did you get to that point, or did they just, you're just like, get
no,
out of here?
No, I asked him, like, why would you even say that? Like, do you know my family? No.
Right.
But, you know, we know Jesus, and we know that Jesus knows your family, and he tells us. I'm like, what, do you have a daily conference with Jesus?
Right.
Like, phone, like, hey, Jesus, it's 5 o'clock. I know it's pretty early where you're at.
You know? I feel like missionary training must be similar. Did you guys ever do telemarketing?
Oh, yeah.
Me too. And it's like one of the most shameful jobs I've ever had. Like, I hated it so much. It was like the worst work experience of my life. But I remember, like, you know, they have all those, like a format you're supposed to follow. Like, you say this, and then when they reject that, you throw back
this.
Here's
your counterpoint.
Here's your counterpoint. And you have, I mean, there was like a supervisor listening in for training and making sure that you're doing. I feel like that they must have those meetings for that. They're like, all right, you're going to open with your family's not going to love you unless you do this. They're going to get weird. Then you point out Jesus. You know, then you wedge your foot in the door. Then you scream. I don't know. You know, like whatever. Like,
yeah.
Maybe Mormons are just the telemarketers to God.
They're God's telemarketers.
Yeah.
I do have to hand it to the Scientologists missionaries, though. I was walking down Hollywood Boulevard one day, and they're walking down. They've got their little T-shirts on. They had a QR code on the back, and I was like, I guarantee you scan that, and your phone is forever Scientology. But that is genius.
That's pretty good.
Like, you're in their database at that point. What do they wear? Because I've been in L.A. for a while, but I can never pick them out.
The only few times I've actually seen them, they were just in a T-shirt and jeans, but
they had like a banner or like a
and like they had their little pamphlets. I haven't seen them in a while, so
they're very mysterious. Yeah, you know, the Scientologists.
Yeah, I haven't seen them out and about there in a while.
I only got one mess. I only got one interaction with a Scientologist. I did a. It was like several albums ago, maybe I guess a long time ago now. But I had a joke where I did this little thing of naming my jokes for a brief period, and I had this one joke. where I just said, I described some crazy scenario, like really absurd, nonsensical. And then I was like, and that joke's called Scientology. and then I was like, and if you're a Scientologist and you're offended by that joke, I wish I could remember what the end. It was something horrible. Just like, go fuck yourself. It was like dang it. There was some, but it was very pointed at them. And some guy watched it at a conference, some college conference I used to do. And then like Facebooked me about like, actually, you know, we're actually very respectable, da da da. And, you know, there's a lot of good points, you know, and you really shouldn't make fun of it. And I think I just literally just Facebook, just go fuck yourself. and then I never heard from him again.
Yeah, which is nice with technology. You can do a GIF with that so they're offended but slightly entertained.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah, exactly. You can lighten the blow a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got your podcast you recently started as well.
Yeah. Speaking of Scientology,
I feel like
that's a topic.
Oh yeah,
I could do on my podcast for sure. Actually, I probably will.
That would have to be
like a 2-part episode. You could go so in depth into that.
That's true. I know. I think about that with some topics, but yeah, I started this podcast. You know, I had a couple different podcasts years ago, but they weren't right. I mean, one I just didn't record them, you know, properly. They didn't sound amazing, and they were just like I didn't think about them enough before I jumped into them. I remember one, I just felt pressured, and I was like, by my agent at the time, and I was like, okay, I'll do a podcast. And I just kind of threw something together, and I'm like, it was like angry. No, it's called Fired Up. But then I felt too much pressure to like be ranty all the time, because I'm not angry about everything, you know, and I just didn't want to be like one dimensional. So that kind of like, after 20 episodes or 15 or so, I was like, oh, I just can't keep, I don't know how to keep doing this. And then the other one, it was just with two other guys called Naked and Fearless, and it started off as a fun like kind of writing experiment that morphed into a podcast, but it wasn't really my thing. It was more of like, you know, it was the three of us, but then we'd all get busy and it was hard to collaborate and it just became a pain in the ass. And so this last one, Time Suck, I really thought for a long time, I'm like, what could I see myself doing for years and years and not get sick of? Like, what's something I'm doing already? And I just thought like I truly am, I've always been a super curious person. And I love the age we live in the sense of Google, where it's like, you know, I remember like doing all my research papers, which I enjoyed actually doing in college. Unlike, you know, some of my friends, I liked research papers, but I didn't like having to go through microfilm and like, you know, go to the library and all the crazy. I can't remember. There was some database computer that we had at our library, but it was, you know, you'd look up and you'd see the synopsis of the article. Then you'd have to go track down the actual Tactile magazine, find the article, read the whole, it was a lot of fucking work.
I even remember doing that, and that wasn't really that long ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
It feels like it's 50 years
ago. Yeah, whenever they go back and show people like in movies that are like scrolling through during their research, they make it seem, and I was like, it was only the mid-90s. Like, it wasn't that long ago.
Exactly, yeah, late 90s is when I was doing that, yeah.
I appreciate it more like going to an 80s movie, watching them scroll through a library instead of Googling how to beat a werewolf.
right, exactly.
It's sad.
And it's like now on your phone or anything, you can just, you know, look up so much information. And yeah, there's like Wikipedia as maybe a launching off point.
Sure, yeah.
But then you can get to like the actual academic sources and things. And, you know, and you can learn a lot quickly. And so I was kind of doing that stuff anywhere just to put off work or whatever. Procrastinating, I'd be, you know, working on some bits, and my brain can only handle working on a bit for every 20 or 30 minutes. I need to like step back for 15 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And in those 15 minutes, I would just find myself in these weird time sucks or these weird like wormholes on the web, where a lot of times it was supposed to be a 15-minute break, and then I'd realize that an hour and a half had gone by because I wanted to know like about Mick Jagger's early life. And it's like, what? I'm not even a big Rolling Stones fan. Like, why do I care so much about Mick Jagger all of a sudden? But it would just get curious. I would just find something that would bounce me somewhere else. And so then I thought, well, why not just like take that and make a podcast out of it? And I really love it. I've only done like 5 episodes now.
Yeah.
But I've already have other episodes lined up in my head. And I'm getting like more I'm trying to find that balance of research and comedy, but I make a whole outline before I do, you know, probably like, I don't know, but 6-8 hours of research on each at least, you know, but I enjoy it on each subject. And then I just try to think of like, what's the best of that to condense into an outline that, you know, I can kind of move through and be funny with. And so far it's like the first one was a Lizard Illuminati.
That was a great one. I actually really like that one.
That one was, I'm just fascinated by stuff like that. I was working with a person who I won't name on the outside chance that they ever listen to this, as far as not that they wouldn't listen to your podcast, but they just
no,
not that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think they listen to anything of mine, But I would never have to want to run into them again, and because it's a person that is seemingly very intelligent in a lot of like regular life ways, but I found out after working with this person for like 9 months, believe all these crazy conspiracy theories. And this and she brought up the lizard Illuminati one time, and I literally just laughed. I'm like, what are you talking about, lizards? She did not laugh.
Yeah.
And she got really scared. She's like, look it up. I'm like, what? She's like, oh no. She's like, it's real. Look it up. And then I'm just like, what just fucking happened? Like this person I thought I knew is being very serious and a little indignant about like that me not believing lizards. So then I found I told another coworker, and he's like, oh, you haven't heard about that? I'm like, well, what is this? And he's like, Google David Icke. And so then I did that, and then lost hours of my life. Because there is this guy on the Isle of Wight named David Icke, who was like a BBC commentator and had a like kind of like an Al Michaels type, like a fairly prolific commentator who just lost his shit over a couple of, he kind of like his gateway drug was the Green Party. Like he got into some real environmental stuff, which is, you know, fine. But then that kind of got him into kind of like the new agey crystal type stuff.
He's like the liberal Alex Jones.
Yeah. Oh my God. Alex Jones. Oh, that makes me want to. Okay. He's one I could do about it. Sorry,
I'm
going to take a detour on Alex. Did you see, I don't want to forget, the Alex Jones recent video of him talking about how Hillary and Obama are demons?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, and how they smell like sulfur.
And have flies in their face.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
It's crazy, but okay. Obama referenced back
yep, I saw
to
that.
It.
I saw that too.
Did he really?
He's just like, they
oh my God.
They say it's we smell like sulfur.
Yeah.
And then he paused and sniffed his arm. It was amazing.
Oh, Alex Jones is so worked up, he's like practically crying, which he does weep sometimes on his show.
Yeah, he does weep.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah, like sobs. There's one video, if you just Google or on YouTube, if you just go Alex Jones weeping, he breaks down because he's so mad about our government and about the liberals that he just like a baby, like sobs for several minutes.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. He's mentally ill. But
I cannot wait to spend hours watching this.
But his video about Hillary having the flies on her face and how she's a demon from hell, like a satanic, like, oh, it's unbelievable. But anyway, like, yeah, so this guy, David Icke, he just had this weird epiphany where he thought he found some old book and somehow reading this book got his brain moving. And then he thought he was a vessel for some godhead figure that was going to speak like a prophet, whatever. He's a prophet, and his prophecies have to do with these Anakai, these lizards, who real quick, they just, apparently there was a group of lizards in space from some other lizard planet, and they need monoatomic gold, which I've researched a bunch. It's not a real thing. It's like a pseudoscience thing. It's like if you went to like a weird fucking new agey homeopathic shop in the back, we got a little bit of monatomic gold. we got a small vial of monatomic gold. My research doesn't seem to be a legit thing.
It's right next to the crystal skulls.
Right next to the crystal skulls. And he thinks that the earth is apparently full of this, and the lizards, they need that stuff to kind of feed. They need two things to feed. They need the gold dust to feed, and that allows them to shapeshift. That's their big shapeshifters. It's very convoluted.
Yeah.
It's very convoluted, this thing. But so they go to Earth, and then they make a bunch of tunnels, because I guess, you know, lizards like live in the ground, like burrow. So they live in their tunnel systems, and that's where they mine for the gold. And then when they get enough gold, they shapeshift, and then they go fuck with humans. And when they're shapeshifted, they can breed with humans to keep the blood. They want to create a bloodline that they can control through their lizard minds. And what they really need for food is human discord. They feed off negative emotion.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
If they can manipulate and create wars, then they're like, that's delicious. And their little lizard bellies are full, and they can get more. It's the most – it's just truly, it's the ramblings of an obvious schizophrenic.
Yeah. And then those people go on to believe that that's who rules our entire government.
Oh, yeah. Yep, they put everybody in power, and they rule like the moon is actually not a moon. It's this is my favorite part of the lizard theory. The moon is like a Death Star,
space station.
Yeah, it's a space station. It's like to control our thoughts. So it's a hollowed out. I just picture like lizards and kind of like old George Lucas kind of like Federation kind of suits, working on old computers. Just like, are we getting the thoughts? We got okay. Is Asia? Are those thoughts? All right, good. You know, it's like, and it's like,
give that guy some more gay porn.
right. Keep him distracted. Keep him distracted.
Becky called Debbie a bitch. That's a good one. That's a good shot. Yeah, that's gonna last us a week.
And it just amazes me that, like, that not only does he believe this, that doesn't really amaze me that one person, because I'm like, okay, sure, yeah, he can be mentally ill. What amazes me is that he writes books that hundreds of thousands of people have bought, and that he goes on speaking tours and packs theaters full of people not making fun of him.
Yeah.
People who are just like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, people that read it were like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can go with that.
That is what is crazy. So, like, you know, that was one, the clown scare.
The clown one, the new one, was really great. I
oh, thanks,
that.
Man. Yeah. I was surprised by what I found on that, you know, that it was, you know, not to be a big spoiler for that one, but it's, you know, just a hoax.
Yeah.
Really? It's funny how people can get worked up, you know, and like...
I saw that McDonald's now will not... They've pulled Ronald McDonald
from public
press tours.
He's,
because...
I refuse to do anything anymore.
Because they didn't want to disrupt things. It's like, if you weren't already creeped out by Ronald McDonald,
right?
What's
know, right?
And most of it now is just, you know, is just pranksters trying to hop on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Like my wife was telling me up in Idaho... Coeur d'Alene, like where we live, she said that a lady that she met from like the PTA or something was sharing this story with her just a couple days ago. This poor kid, her son was like, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old, and he had like the worst day a 9 or 10 year old can have outside of like extreme tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, he broke his arm. They go to the hospital. Shit. He comes home from the hospital with his broken arm, and there was two teenagers dressed as evil clowns waiting in their driveway and staring at them menacingly as they pull up. And so, like, her son, like, freaks out. She gets out, like, screams at him. The kids run off. And she calls the police. And the police are like, it's not illegal to be a creepy clown. Like, sorry. Like, that's why they're able to do it. They're like, you can do that. Like, as long as they leave when you tell them to leave, there's really nothing we can do. But I'm like, God, that poor kid, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just assholes like that, I think.
Yeah.
Keeping on. But somebody did get their, if you look on YouTube, another great one. I think it was recent. It was, I watched a lot of these prank videos.
Oh, okay.
And I'm amazed when those guys don't get beat up for doing their pranks.
Yeah.
And somebody, it's so great. It was kind of like that Vitaly does a lot of clown pranks.
Uh-huh.
He's some Russian dude that, I don't know if it was his, but it was like his where they were in a dark parking garage. And you know, like the stairways, you come out to your level, stairways lit up, but it's a little bit darker when you come out to the garage. And they had the clown with some big hammer or something hiding right behind the doorway. So when you walk out to your floor, boom, scary clown is, you know, just right there to your right. And then there's the guy farther back filming it. So we're seeing these two guys come back up the stairs, and the one guy comes out, and the clown, rah, like scares him, and the guy just instinct takes over, and he punches the clown twice in the face just knocks him to the ground. And then the cameraman screaming like, no, it's a joke. But I'm like, no, it's a bad joke.
Yeah.
You just got punished for it.
There's one I saw that it's hysterical. A little fucked up, but I'm surprised they didn't get the shit beat out of him. So they're pranking the parents, but they go to kids at, like, playgrounds, and they're wearing ropes, and they open it, and the parents see it from behind, and they get freaked out. They're like, no, it's okay.
Oh,
they're fully
God.
Clothed, and they're wearing stuff on their shirt that
I'd
says stay
out.
In school and stuff like that. Like, positive messages.
That is really funny, though.
Yeah, and then their parents are like, oh, okay, well, okay, as long as you're not showing your dick,
God.
It's great.
It's like those guys that they have their buddy walking from the different direction.
Yeah.
They'll go walking past some girl, and... she thinks that they're talking to them, and he'll just be like, those are some great melons. And
she starts
to get offended and turns around, the guy's friend that's walking towards him has two melons in his hand.
Right. Yeah. I love those clever ones.
I love prank videos so
you know,
goddamn
you
much.
Gotta, not to keep getting distracted,
no,
but like, you should Google Japanese game show pranks.
Oh, okay. I've seen some of those.
I have gone down that rabbit hole more times than I would like to admit.
It's unbelievable. It's fascinating. I'm like, do they have no laws over there?
And they have the Brazilian ones, like where you've got the people in the elevators.
Yep, I've seen
those.
That
are
one.
My absolute favorite.
Now I gotta watch
where they like
too.
They remove the panels from the elevators and people get in, and then it's like there's all of a sudden a power outage. And like people start hitting the buttons,
those.
And then the power comes back on. There's some like creepy fucking ring kids sitting
there
in the corner.
Oh man,
yeah.
I was like, I don't get scared that easy. Like I don't think I would even give them the reaction they'd want. Other than I would just shit myself.
Oh,
like there would just be
internalize
a foul
it.
Odor then in the elevator that they had to deal with.
Quietly shit yourself and say hello, madam.
The ring looking girl, the worst one I've seen on among that kind of genre, I guess, of pranks now.
Yeah.
Is it was a Japanese one, and they had like people like. I think the guys was they were saying that they were prepping, getting ready for an audition. Like they came to do an audition, or he's getting ready for some kind of performance. So they're in a dressing room and they're like looking in the mirror, kind of getting ready.
Oh yeah, I did see
that. Was unbelievable. And so this mirror is like a fake mirror.
This was the Conjuring one, wasn't it?
Oh, you're right.
It was the Conjuring 2. Because I saw one just like that where they had the nun where they were getting ready for the auditions.
No, this was a different one. This was like the ring-looking girl. Because this was like the dark hair hanging over the face. Because all of a sudden in the mirror, you see that dark-haired girl, like, you know, looking back at you through the mirror. And then it was like a fake, very thin. She busts through the mirror.
Ooh.
like just comes through the – and then, like, it just, like, you know, comes straight through it just because it's not glass. And the person just, like – this one dude went over his chair backwards trying to scramble away. Like just threw himself back over his chair trying to get away from this. And then the worst one I saw – this poor guy is running around the room from this ring looking kind of like there was that other Sarah Michelle Gellar.
The Grudge.
Grudge ring tight looking, you know, bad girl. And then as he's freaking out, two more identical looking demon girls pop through out of other walls. And the guy was just squealing. He was so scared.
There's those ones, too, where they prank TV anchors where they're like, you're going to do a news story, and there's a TV, like, on the background, and they have it play, like, an apocalypse. So they're like, holy shit, this is happening right now. And people are freaking out. They're like, I'm sorry. I've been cheating on my wife.
No way.
Just, like, fucking just, it's a prank, dude. And they're like, oh, fuck.
You would have thought they would have learned their lessons with, like, War of the Worlds back
in
the
day.
Oh, yeah.
Because people legitimately lost their shit on that.
That was the initial big prank like that, yeah.
I'd love to do one where it's like you're in a conference room or like a place and you're like interviewing people. It's like a fake interview.
Yeah.
And you just try to see how much shit they'll do to get the job.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I swear they did that on the Jamie Kennedy experience years
probably.
Ago.
It's probably been done.
Yeah.
I swear I saw that on one of those where they – it's been years, but yeah, I remember doing something like that too.
It always seemed funny to me to see what people would do just to get a job.
Well, it's kind of like it's not the job interview, but it's almost like Eric Andre show, like his clips.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Where it's like how far can I push this person during an interview before they just leave? You know, where it's like they ask them no questions about their project, no questions that make any sense, say very insulting things to them, and then have like a bunch of horrific things going on around him. He'll whip his dick out. In the interview, like a lot, often, like his dick will come out a lot. Like he'll just start to get naked, like while someone's, you know, sitting there, or someone will run in and he'll pretend like they'll have a prop gun and he'll like shoot an intern, and then like start talking to them again, like sorry about that. And these people are like, what the fuck is happening? Like, or they'll just freak out and they'll leave the show, or
I gotta check that.
Or like Flavor Flav wanted to punch him. And Roy Hibbert almost swung a bat on him, like because he takes
Holy
it so
shit.
Far.
People will do anything though at the same time to get on TV. I mean, a lot of people have thought that like the Daily Show segments are faked, and it's like no, those people like that's just what they believe. And it's like, of course, they edit the best responses.
Sure.
They all sign a waiver to. That, you know, they're going to be on TV, and you know they're basically making fun of them for their perspective. And, we're going to be on TV. We're going to be on Comedy Central.
and it is amazing what people just will believe. You know, it's like I shot a little sizzle presentation for a show years ago that I wanted, that I pitched to Comedy Central and some other places, and probably my favorite of the shows that never made it, because I still think it could be a great concept. But it was like, I have a little bit of a psychology background, and it was this kind of the study of fear, not fear of authority, but about how like people who have an authority kind of role, they did like this, Stanley Milgram did this like prison experiment where people who were being fake cops in this prison experiment all of a sudden got more authoritative than they would be in normal life because they just took on that role. And then the fake prisoners bowed down to the fake cops at a level they didn't expect when they were kind of, you know, talked like that. They just like would just go along with it because this is an authority figure, even if it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I kind of tested this for this little presentation where I dressed up like a security guard, and not even like a good, like a reasonable looking security guard, like a cheesy parody of a security guard.
Okay.
But I had my little walkie talkie on my shoulder, you know, like, I'll be right there. You know, I had somebody be like, oh, we got a code 147, you know, just saying like security-ish things. I had like pepper spray and all this stuff on like a tool belt. And I would just walk around these parks in Santa Monica and in public places and just start bossing people around under the guise of ordinances and the law. And amazing. One person ignored me, but everybody else did what I said. And it would be stuff like, I remember somebody was like, it's so stupid. Somebody was playing the drums at a park. And I was like, whoa, 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 dude, it's not 4 o'clock yet. And he's like, what? And I'm like, no, you didn't hear about the new ordinance? And he's like, what? And I'm like, you know, first they're thinking I'm joking, you know, but then I'd be like, no, no, it's 9713. I'm not, look, I don't even agree with it. I voted against it, but the board put it through. And you can play drums in this park between 4 and 5. And then you can play them again between 7 and 8. That's it. I don't want to write you up. And he was like, all right. And he just like, he stopped, he waited like 5 minutes and they started playing the drums again. And I remember like, they were even like more, I remember one time these people were reading on one side of the sidewalk. And I was like, hey, 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 guys. No, 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 not there. Not there. That's a no book zone. That's ordinance 7-6-4. And I'm like, you can read books on the non-street side of the sidewalk to your heart's content. I will write all of you up. If you, and all the grown men, all three of them fucking picked up their blankets, moved to the other side of the sidewalk and started reading again. Like, that changed me forever about, like, I'm like, oh, I get people so much more since that little experiment we did.
I hope there's footage of that somewhere.
There is. It's on like a Vimeo or something.
Oh, nice.
I want to say I've seen a couple of those before that you did.
Yeah, we put it out years ago. Yeah, and it just never. It might even be on YouTube, but I think it was like a private. I know it's somewhere. It was like a little 6 minute. It's not well shot because it was just for a presentation, but you get the idea. Like my friend would be hiding in the bushes or whatever, and but we did a ton of those. My favorite one, the one that made me the most nervous, is a crossing guard at a school. I did a random sobriety test on him. I said I was an auditor, and I made him touch his nose, walk 1 foot, and then.
Holy shit.
But before he did all that, he told me right before, he's like, oh, okay. He's like, he told me he was an off-duty police officer. So then I had that moment inside of like, oh, shit. Like, cause it's totally illegal to impersonate an authority figure like that. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, we gotta keep tabs on everybody. I mean, that's why I'm here, is because I know that you are a police officer. And it's like, we're from an independent auditing agency, and we're just trying to make sure that, you know, everybody's legit, you know, goodwill for the police force. You know, you just like talk the talk.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you could tell they were like, this is fucking weird. But they're like, all right, whatever. And then he did. We shook hands and went about my way.
Did you ever see the one that Kimmel did on Hollywood Boulevard where he set up an airport, like, TSA check?
No.
It got people to actually stop and go through the TSA check to continue down.
The sidewalk?
Yeah. And they just had Sal out there just like, no, you have to go through the security check to go through this part of the sidewalk. And people were stopping and taking off their shoes and their belts.
God damn, I got to find that too. Well, one thing about the podcast I do is we do movie recommendations.
Yeah, yeah.
So this the big thing about this episode is your favorite movies, Dan Cummins' favorite movies.
Yes, Tombstone. It's been number one ever since I was, I don't know, 16, 17. I just think that movie is – I'm a big fan of Westerns.
Yeah.
Like just a good Western. Now I'm flashing on another movie I just saw on Netflix. It was a Western. I'm like, oh, I wish I could remember the name of it. It was a really, really, really dark one. It was like an Eli Roth meets Western.
Oh, shit. I don't know what that one is.
Oh, it's like I'm picturing it. And it's like,
It was recent. It was recent. It was in the last like 2 years. And there were some bigger names in it. I think Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Kurt Russell was in it.
Oh.
Yeah, Kurt Russell was one of the guys in it. The guy from Lost. He was like the main guy, the kind of the heartthrob of Lost.
Oh, was he the guy from Party of Five?
The what?
The Party of Five guy?
I never saw that. I don't know.
He's the one that was at the end, that he was by himself.
I never saw the last season, sadly. But it probably was that guy.
I've just spoiled that.
No. I think I heard about it already.
Way to go.
I'm never going to. I just kind of lost. But like, it was Kurt Russell. It was, But it was surprisingly good.
I know what you're talking about, and it is going to drive me crazy.
I know. So, yeah.
Bone Tomahawk?
Yes, no. Bone Tomahawk.
Was it Bone Tomahawk?
It was. It was Bone Tomahawk. Okay. That was – I like horror, and I like Westerns, and that was a really good mashup.
Nice.
Yeah, like some legitimate kind of scare stuff. But Tombstone, I just thought, like, just from top to bottom, I just really liked the whole thing. I just I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy who played Johnny Ringo, you know, the second in command of the Cowboys.
Michael Biehn, I believe.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, everybody was just the way it was shot. I love the old Billy Bob Thornton cameo.
Yeah.
He does not look like Billy Bob Thornton.
No. He doesn't look like skinny and like hate his life yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a cool early, and he does not play a Billy Bob Thornton-ish role. You know, and then my favorite of is Val Kilmer though.
Yeah, Doc Hollywood.
Oh, Doc Holliday. Yeah, the Doc Hollywood. That was the Michael.
Michael J. Fox. Yeah.
Very different movie.
Oh, super different.
but Doc Holliday is like my favorite bad guy in it. Or not bad guy, but favorite just kind of.
Like kind of smart-assy kind of
character in a Western where he's really not a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah, he's kind of like the anti-hero kind of.
Yeah,
like
yeah, he reminds me almost like it's a similar role, almost like a rogue superhero in like a Marvel type movie, you know, kind of like the lone wolf.
Yeah.
But he's chose to assimilate himself with, you know, out of respect for Wyatt Earp. And you know what character he's like, I'm gonna be on your team, you know, and I don't like what these other guys are doing. But it's like there's just so many the confrontations between Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's just so many scenes like it's just so classic, like when the fake gun twirling.
Oh, with the cup?
With the cup.
I love that.
Yeah,
yeah. So goddamn much.
And then my favorite line, like, you know, I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah,
you know,
especially at the end too, where he shoots the guy in the head.
I was playing for blood.
Stumbling and he's like,
come on, Johnny Ringo. Yeah, when he's like, oh yeah.
It was funny when I was watching Tombstone back like a year ago, and I can't watch anything with Val Kilmer in it anymore because all I think is it's Fat Pete Holmes.
That is funny.
Oh my god.
Because and I want to say Pete had referenced it at one point.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And it's been stuck in my head ever since.
Yeah,
I
that's
see him
funny.
On anything.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's Fat Pete Holmes.
Yeah.
And I just keep waiting for him to give his trademark Pete laugh the entire time.
Well, at least in Tombstone, he's pre Fat Kilmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still thin Kilmer in that.
But I can still see the Pete Holmes.
A little, yeah.
Yeah.
He went on a juice fast for a month, and he's good.
That's funny, yeah.
This is actually a stellar cast. I mean, Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
You know, the cameo with...
Sam Elliott's such a good Western actor.
Yeah. I love his voice.
The mustache alone, yeah, and then his voice, yeah.
Yeah, which...
Well, in the other movie, The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Like, I love when his random, you know, like the narration and then appearance there when he shows up at the bar at the bowling alley.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like Sam Elliott. It's like, it's just, yeah, it's such a great scene.
What was the new Western Netflix show that he?
Oh, I know. I didn't see it.
It's like Danny Masterson
and
Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Ranch something. Ranch.
It didn't look good to me.
Didn't look.
No,
good.
It looked too
sitcom-y. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the very flat kind of look.
The Ranch.
Yeah.
It's called The Ranch. Yeah.
The Ranch.
Yeah.
I'm not even a big fan of Westerns, but I like this movie just because of all the intertwining like storylines.
Oh yeah.
You got Wyatt Earp. You got Doc Holliday with his dying from tuberculosis.
Yep.
Which I thought was cool. They made him like lay on a like bed of ice just to get him
shaking. Oh, really?
Shaking
to get him shaking? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And it's intense.
Skin so pale and everything.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I guess I wasn't that sick after all. Yeah. And then Wyatt's brothers, Virgil and Morgan, like the dynamics between them and their wives, you know, where the women in that don't have the wives don't have like huge speaking roles, but their characters are strongly like identified. And there's interesting interplay. You know, like I like how Morgan and Virgil's wives are clearly not a fan of like what Wyatt, like kind of where he's leading the family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that kind of stuff. And then the whole romantic interplay between Wyatt's wife and then the actress from out of town that he kind of, you know, falls for but has mixed feelings about.
Oh, yeah, the one with Billy Zane.
Yeah, Billy Zane traveled with her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can picture her face clearly. But I can't remember the actress's name. She was in a few movies in that era, and she's got that, you know, kind of good, like really pretty, but also kind of like girl next door, not like that Angelina Jolie kind of like unattainable.
What was her name?
Was it Dana Delaney?
Yeah, because she was in
God,
she was in a different China Beach or China.
I think so. Let's see.
But yeah, that was her. That was her for sure. And yeah, just their interplay was really good. And if anybody's going
to
watch it, I don't want to spoil anything if you haven't seen it.
Oh, we do that all the time.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
That movie has been out.
And it's been out for
20,
so long.
25 years.
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah. Fuck it.
So yeah, if they wanted to see it, they should have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It even expired off of Netflix last year.
Yeah.
So it had
right,
its run there.
Yeah. It's been out.
Spoilers
kind
of make me want to see the movie even more sometimes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Coming from a writing background, for me, it's like when I hear a spoiler, it's like, okay, well, I'm more intrigued to know how they get there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
but granted, when it comes down to, like, Breaking Bad or something, I mean, somebody would have spoiled that for me.
Yeah.
I probably would have killed them.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been death.
Well, and it's not like this movie, Tombstone, was like a Sixth Sense type movie where, like, if you know the ending, it ruins, you know, it kind of, like, takes away. It's just, but I like how they, you know, how they get together in the end and have their little moments. That was a nice touch. I mean, really, like, from a my perspective, I'm like, God, the only thing that would have made that movie a little better would have been like just a little nudity, but
just a little bit,
just,
okay,
just enough. Yeah. But actually, but I say that, and right after I said it, I'm like, well, no, but not really, because it is a movie that I could show to my kids, you know, not too much longer.
Yeah.
I don't know why nudity.
But to be clear, I mean, some good Kurt Russell or Bill Paxton nudity would have been fantastic.
Just if it would have just had a little Kurt Russell dick in it.
Yeah.
Like coming out of the shower. Nothing. Just some artsy.
Some Ben Affleck.
Just full frontal.
Just some artistic.
Little full frontal Sam Elliott, just to see if the mustache is full match.
Also has a mustache.
Yeah. Exactly. His pubic hair is the exact shape of his mustache.
I trim it the same way.
Right. Exactly. It also has a deep voice.
Yeah. Oh, that would be hilarious.
It's just his stand-in.
There's like a really good action in this movie, too. Yeah.
The scenes when Wyatt rounds up the two rogue cowboys, one of those was Michael Rooker from, you know, he had a good role in the first couple seasons of Walking Dead and
a lot
of the things. And him and that other kind of cowboy that were like, dude, we're not into what they're doing anymore. That was too much when they killed so-and-so. We're out. I think it was when they killed that actor. Actually, there was a woman or something. I don't know. There was somebody that killed it was too far for them. And then they join. And then they do that like big ride where there's like those great shots of them on horseback going across the plains. And then, you know, just a montage of lots of like, you know, shootouts. And then they have that great scene on the river.
Oh,
where,
yeah, okay.
Where Wyatt just walks through the water. And I think he says, no more. No more. Like he's saying something, but they're like, what the fuck? They're like, everyone's trying to shoot at him. And like, it was some kind of like nod to like George Washington's supposed, I think, march across the Potomac it was, where he had the bullet holes in his jacket after the battle, but he was never shot. But it was just a great, like, you know, over the top, but in a good way, action scene.
Yeah. I like the little quips in this movie too. Like, mainly from Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Like,
he had a lot of good ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Little quick liners. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, that cup scene is probably the funniest scene.
Oh,
in
my God.
Movie.
And what was it? And there was a piano scene too where, the guy from Sideways, the actor who, he has a new suit,
Thomas Hayden Church.
Thomas Hayden Church played one of the cowboys. And Thomas Hayden, there's so many actors in that movie. Thomas Hayden Church, like when Val Kilmer is playing the piano with his hot Hungarian. I thought I had such a crush on that woman, that actress.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer's love interest is so fucking sexy in this movie. And she's so like bad, but in a good way. And like the two of them are on the piano and that guy comes over and Val Kilmer's playing something beautiful. And he's like, you ever heard of, and he references some American composer that was kind of like, just kind of like, eh. You know, like your today's equivalent of like, you ever heard of Justin Bieber, you know, or something, you know, like something popular. And then Val Kilmer shoots back with something like James fucking Chopin. He got real snarky with some kind of classical musical reference, but he was constantly, no matter how drunk he was, no matter how like bad guys were around him, he just never caved.
Yeah.
He was going to smart off.
He was on the ball at all times.
Yeah. And I love that you knew that he was dying. And I love that his character had that kind of attitude of like, I legitimately don't give a shit what happens in the situation. Like, go ahead and try to fucking kill me. Like, I do. I'm dead. I'm a dead man walking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just gave him such balls, you know?
It's like a Michael Douglas in Falling Down. It's just he's fucking, he's given up.
I just saw that again
recently. That's a great rewatch.
That is. That's a crazy movie. I think about, I mean, he's so insane in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with his wife and everything. But I do think about when he's just in traffic and he just has that fuck it moment and he just leaves his car.
Yeah.
And it's just like he is done taking anyone's shit. Yeah, I think about that movie too often on the 405. Yeah. I'm just like, that would be nice just to get out and be like, fuck all of this. Yeah.
And on the 405, you have enough time to get out, go do whatever else you need to do, and you can come back, and your car will still be there.
That's right. You can get out of your car, find a weird neo-Nazi guy in a pawn shop basement, have your interactions, go back into your car, and no one's even honking at you yet. You haven't moved. Yeah.
So William Dafoe was actually the original choice to play Doc Holliday.
What?
Yeah, but
know that.
Buena Vista refused to distribute the film if he was cast due to Dafoe's role in the controversial Last Temptation of Christ in 1988.
And, wow, a little throwback to our topics at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah.
I honestly think Willem Dafoe would have been a little bit too sinister to play.
Maybe,
And you know what? William Dafoe, I wouldn't have bought the chemistry between him and the Hungarian woman.
Yeah, I can see that.
William Dafoe is an odd-looking man.
Yeah.
It'd be more of a forced relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
He has money.
Right. Yeah.
Mickey Rourke actually turned down the role of Johnny Ringo. That could have been good.
Because that was pre-fucked up face Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
That was pre, I look like a 60-year-old housewife on Montana Avenue at Santa Monica, Mickey Rourke, where it's like...
Not as much cosmetic pouty lips.
Yeah. It's like, how did you go from just like one of like a heartthrob slash badass to like somebody's odd-looking grandma?
In
a couple years.
Yeah.
Like he and I and I. I know
this is what happens when you listen to a lot of Aerosmith.
Yes. Yeah. Steven Tyler's another one. But Steven Tyler, at least, I feel like it's more like how he dresses and how he naturally looks.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's funny. My wife has a thing for Steven Tyler. I'm like, what? Really? She's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, if you were with me, you would sleep with Steven Tyler. She's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you are fucking weird.
Really?
Like, yeah. She's like, but Mickey Rourke, I don't have any sympathy because he did it all to himself.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you had a weird amount of plastic surgery.
Yeah.
It's such an odd look. That being said, The Wrestler, fucking fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Conan O'Brien's sister was in that movie.
What?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know.
That's the one that was in the Oscars, right?
I think they won. I think he didn't he win a Golden Globe for that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought this was weird. Stallone recommended that George P. Cosmatos would be a better choice directing because he directed Rambo First Blood 2 in 85 and Cobra in 86. But George actually was a ghost director for Kurt Russell, the real director of Tombstone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I guess he helped out, in that a little bit.
Well, no one's going to say no to Stallone. Maybe now. But back,
yeah, maybe, yeah. Even then. Now, he's still doing pretty well, but yeah.
Our next one is actually probably one of my favorite horror movies is the 1990 classic Misery.
Yeah, I'm a huge Stephen King fan.
Yeah.
And that one, oh my gosh, Kathy Bates... And then Khan, right? Is it James Khan?
Yeah, James Khan,
yeah. I'm the worst with names. But, like, and I love that one because of its simplicity. You know, where it's like, and it's like such a good example of a horror movie that doesn't require a lot of special effects, doesn't require, some convoluted paranormal plot. Like, it can be as simple as you are stuck in a snowed-in Eric cabin where nobody knows where you are. And you're being held hostage by a crazy fucking cat lady, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, and she plays that character so well.
She channels it so much even now with her roles in American Horror Story.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, even this season. Yeah. Have you watched much of this new season?
No, I checked out after the one that was too much for me was the circus one, The Freaks.
Yeah, The Freak Show.
I just thought it got so convoluted with the plot.
Yeah.
And what I didn't like about that one is by 8 episodes into that season, I remember my wife and I talking. We were like, I don't give a fuck about any of these characters.
Freak Show was pretty terrible. Hotel last year was awesome.
Oh okay.
Really?
Hotel was great. And this new one, Roanoke.
Really?
Like,
it's good.
The entire time my wife and I kind of keep going, okay, wait, what the fuck?
But in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way.
Oh,
like,
shit, I'm going to have to
check that out. I'll be back in because I loved season 2, Asylum.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. But then after, like when I stopped watching, I was like, is this just the how many times can Jessica Lange cry show? It's like, I get it. She can cry on cue. Does she have to fucking tear up every fucking scene of every episode?
And a lot of people discounted Hotel because of...
Lady Gaga. Yeah.
And then when she won the Golden Globe, people were like, oh, please. I'm like, no.
No, she was good, huh?
Yeah, she did was really
good.
Well.
She was really good in it.
Okay.
But
yeah,
this new season, Kathy Bates plays a very similar character to...
To Misery,
and that was the first thing I thought in it.
I love that.
But this new season, too, not to stray too far from Misery, but it's kind of like a... one of those true stories.
Oh,
type
cool!
Of
yeah,
the,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
the way
yeah.
they
right.
shot it. So they have the reenactment and then the actual people talking about it. And then I don't want to spoil anything, but the episode that just aired this last week, all of a sudden they put a whole new twist on it.
Okay,
where it was just kind of like, wait, what the fuck? And then as it started, I was like, I don't know that I'm going to like where they're going with this. And then by the end of the episode, it was like, oh shit! Like
cool. I'll check it out then.
I love how she did this in Misery, though.
Oh yeah, and my wife she never saw it when it came out.
Oh really?
We watched it together, And she, I mean, it legitimately like scared her because it's like, you know, the paranormal ones, I love those ones too. I'm a fan of horror in general. But those ones, even though I get scared in moments, I do have that voice in my head just like going like, well, this isn't real. Like, and this is not, I don't actually believe in that stuff. It scares me when I watch it sometimes. And when I'm by myself, you know, I'll say like right now in the lit room, I'm like, I don't believe in that stuff. Yeah. But like cut to the same room at 12:30 tonight, if I hear a weird noise, I'm like, okay, please don't be real. You know, like I started getting nervous. But like with the Kathy Bates thing, it's so plausible to me.
Yeah.
That there could be, yeah, it's like if some nut found you, and how terrifying is that? Especially, you know, that movie was pre-cell phone,
which
you know, affects the plot a lot. You know, if it had been cell phones, that'd have been harder to pull off. Small rural area, you know, poor writer, you know, goes off, and then you have your number one fan of this writer. And like, what a great addition to that, where she's like, wants him to write the next book that he doesn't want to write. And then, the scene on that, the scariest scene to me that I always think about with Misery is when he's tried to escape and she is very not happy with him.
And
she breaks his ankles.
Oh, that
his
fucking
feet.
Score to it too just makes it even worse.
That's such a horrific scene.
Yeah.
Oh man,
and God, again, it makes my ankles.
Again,
I'm having like phantom pain.
To some of that in the new American Horror Story.
Oh really?
Oh nice.
Yeah. God. So yeah, there's some of these references that they truly are tipping their hat to Misery with Kathy Bates.
Wow.
Character.
I was watching that part and I was thinking like. As a comedian, it's probably the best profession to have that never happen, to where someone's like, hey, you ruined a joke, so I'm going to break your ankles or you tried to escape. No, they just tie you to a chair and want to talk to you for like, you want to watch TV?
Yeah.
I don't know. Kurt Brownell did get attacked on stage last year.
Sure. Oh, really?
I want to say it was in like New Jersey. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow, I've been worried about that. I've gotten in like... threatening conversations with people.
Really?
And then I had to throw somebody off stage once, but he wasn't that threatening. He was an idiot, but he did come up on stage after I told him, like, don't come up here. And then he like marched on up and I just like spun him around and then threw him back off stage. But luckily he was not a kind of a, didn't have a real threatening presence, but it's like, but it is weird where it's like, they're right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could come up. But I mean, but at least there's people around and stuff. What scares me so much about Misery is like, that is like one of my worst nightmares where, if you're at, like when you're physically helpless and you're at the whim of some madman, you know, like it reminds me of like, I hate it when like when I was younger and I would get like really, really drunk. Like I remember one experience I had in college where I was really drunk and with some girl at a party and like she wanted, it's funny, like you hear about like the campus rape. It's like, It can be somewhat flipped around too. It's like it's never talked about. But this girl was like, she was not taking no for an answer. Like I was on a bunk bed and I was pushing her off the bed, and I was like, get away from me. And I was so drunk, it was hard. Like the room was spinning, and she wouldn't. She's like, come on, stop being a baby. And she just like kept coming up. And luckily, my friends came in the room, and I had enough cognizance to be like, get her out of here. And they like shuttled her out of there. But I was like, if they wouldn't have come by, it's like I was not physically capable of defending myself. And to be in his, which is terrifying feeling, like I feel like I feel so bad for women that way, just to live in the world where men are so much bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Yeah.
To like be around these dudes all the time who could like fucking hold you down if they wanted to. It's like, we don't have to experience that usually the same way. But James Caan character, it's like, it's a terrifying reversal where he is at the whim of this woman, and she's a pretty physically imposing woman in that, you know.
Oh, movie. Yeah. He has to tackle her down a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. She's tough. When the big finale scene, their final battle, she's a fucking tough bitch in that movie. But, like, but can you imagine, like, when she breaks his ankles, I'm just thinking about, like, the feeling of hopelessness you would have. Where you're like, Jesus, now I don't know if I'll not only walk away from here, I don't know if I'll ever walk again.
Yeah, you don't know if you're ever going to escape.
Yeah. It's kind of a this is it.
Yeah.
And there was some movie I never saw. Was it like Boxing Helen or something?
Yeah, I don't think I saw that one.
So I just remember hearing, maybe it's like an urban legend. Maybe there's not even a real movie. But I just remember hearing some premise where like the woman's hands and feet were cut off. Or maybe even full limbs. And she was just like kept by this madman. And I'm like, that would be the worst.
Jeez. Oh, yeah.
Because then you know, I'm never going to walk again. I'm never going to have my hands again. And I can do nothing to fight back.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, but that movie really captures that well, where you just...
That's a good wormhole, too, is Urban Legends. That will take you down a fucking tunnel.
For a time suck, that would be good. It's funny, people are starting to email me now with suggestions. They're like, you should talk about this. I did get one from an archaeologist. There's an archaeologist in Britain who's like
a
fan of the show. And she's like, she sent me like 15 links on Facebook yesterday for the way we handle our dead, essentially, like burial rites.
Okay, that'd
like
be
historically, like the Egyptians, you know, like mummification, but like how, you know, we use cremation now, and I'm like, that actually is interesting.
Yeah.
Like how cultures have, what do you do with your fucking dead people? Like, do you just bury them? Do you push them on an ice float? You know, yeah. do you mummify them? You know, like, but yeah, urban legends. But man, but yeah, scary movie.
Yeah, I love urban legends so much.
Like, yeah.
I spent years just researching the shit out of urban legends.
It's the wormhole I go down, and I'm sure you do it even when you travel, where, like, when I was in Portland last week, the hotel I was staying in was, I'm convinced just walking into it that it was haunted.
Yeah.
But, it, like, this is the hallway inside.
That's a scary hallway.
Oof.
And I guess the people that own it, they're called the McMenamins.
Oh, yeah.
Like this, that was the Crystal
Hotel. There's a college there.
And they have a bunch of them all, like right around the Crystal Ballroom, and but they have like this passport, and you can like go to all their different stops. But like, I started immediately going down the wormhole of how fucking haunted is this place?
That's like reminds me of The Shining.
Right, yeah.
Oh yeah.
The Overlook Hotel.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Very Shining-esque hallway.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, that scene where she does the hobbling, I think it's called, where she like, in the book, she actually cuts one of his feet off.
Oh yeah, I don't know that I ever read the book. I've read so many of his books, but I think that's one where I just saw the movie but didn't read the book.
Yeah, that was, he was very like not wanting to talk about the movie for years, and it's
Stephen King.
Yeah, turned out it's because he was having his own addiction issues, and he didn't want to, you know, talk about anything around that time.
Because he had his struggles with alcohol.
Yeah.
Where stuff like, I mean, you did feel like James Caan's character was very much like, this is like a fear of Stephen King. Yeah.
You see that in a lot of his stuff, though, too. I don't know if you've ever read Stephen King's On Writing.
I have.
It's a fantastic read.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you see, I mean, even as he starts into that book where he talks about a lot of like his early childhood and how,
yeah,
and you see so much of that reflect even into like Children of the Corn and he brings a lot of autobiographical things to each one of his stories.
Well, the one I really love about this one is just the flip-floppiness of her calm, crazy, excited, and then not to mention that raining scene where she's like, I get sad at the rain.
Yeah,
I've got this gun. I might have to put some bullets in it one of these days.
Yeah,
it's like, fuck this. I would build a cheapo MacGyver Iron Man suit
to
fuck out of there.
And that's such a cool thing in movies, like horror movies, when it doesn't have to be all like big and loud and crazy to be scary. Sometimes the scariest scenes are those, you know, really quiet ones. And that's such a good example of that, where she is just having that emotional moment. Yeah, and just really sad. And you know by that point in the movie she's incredibly mentally unstable. And like, and just when she says things like that, and then they capture, and James Caan's expressions. He had so many good scenes.
Oh yeah.
Non-speaking scenes, or just with his eyes and stuff, where you're just like, oh my God. Well, you're knowing what he's thinking, where he's like, oh fuck.
Yeah, he's like talking her down too. Like, those scenes are really great. Where he's in the basement.
Trying
to, like, I gotta finish it, darling, you know, because she's like in love with him, clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little surprised she didn't try to fuck him.
I know, but she had such a weird character that way, where she was so childish.
Okay, I see that.
In a way, you know, too, like her fascination with him and with his the love story of his book.
Yeah.
Was so creepily innocent for a woman of her age. You know, like I pictured her character as the forever virgin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like the person who, like, they're so fucked up and have so many weird things about, like, the world, like they just wouldn't be able to emotionally handle.
Yeah, I'm surprised he at least didn't wake up with her cuddling him in bed.
Yeah.
That would have been a creepy scene.
Yeah, just rubbing his face.
Oh, yeah, like, tell me about misery.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Her freaking out about misery, like, you killed her, you son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
So that freaked me out as a kid watching that.
Oh, yeah.
But there's parts in this movie where she freaks out. I laugh my balls off. When she's talking about the Rocket Man, like, going to see the theater as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he corrects her, he's like, I know that.
Oh, yeah.
And then
exactly.
She's like, the next week it would start off and he was stuck in a car. But how did he get out of the cock-a-doodle car?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what the fuck
is that? Yep, Kathy Bates is just she's so multidimensional as an actress that you can get that out of her, where she's going to make you laugh and then fear for your life.
Right.
Like, I would love to. I mean, when that came out, we didn't have as much like Access Hollywood and E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you didn't hear a ton about you know, behind the scenes, how what their experiences were. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Before Suicide Squad came out, you heard every fucking actor in that movie talk about their experience with Jared Leto.
Right.
I would love to know, like, what James Caan's experience was, where Kathy Bates comes across as a very method type actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can only imagine having to go through that on a day-to-day set basis. Or if she was, you know, as soon as they called cut, if she was...
Tim, I'm glad you asked, because I have a fun fact about that.
A fun fact?
I do.
A fun fact.
Kathy Bates actually ended up getting upset over the violence. Caan recalls that his co-star was crying when it came to shoot the infamous scene of her breaking his ankle. So Bates also cried before shooting the fight sequence at the end. So she was overwhelmed by the violence and aspect of it.
Just by the overall emotion of the film. That's interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. I wonder how long that movie took to film. I feel like it would have moved pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the scenes with the old sheriff and his wife, kind of like the B plot or the B scenes like that, they didn't, those scenes never, rarely involved Kathy Bates even sometimes. But, you know, like, so you could have shot, you could have had a B unit shooting those while Caan and.
Plus where it's so isolated, I mean, it's easier to move around.
Right.
You can knock out a lot more pages of a script in a day.
Yeah.
Than on a bigger production.
Because a good 65-70% of that movie had to have just taken place in that house.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't find anything about how many it was shot. Because there's some movies you'd be surprised that are shot in like 3 weeks or like 46 days.
But it's not like a major blockbuster. I mean, that's fairly average. Most of them will do a 30-day shoot period at the longest and then...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Iron Man and those that it's like, here's fucking 6 months gone from your lives.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, they have the, like, how she's always mentioning about, like, his swearing in the books and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is funny because Stephen King would always get criticism over that in his books from fans.
About the swearing?
Yeah. So he has kind of a nice little callback to him.
Isn't that funny? That's a funny thing to me. I've talked about that with, like, comedy. Where, you look on certain comics, like comments or whatever like that, if you do, like, if they're a clean comic, and, like, a lot of the favorable ratings are basically these comments of, I just like that you don't have to be dirty to be funny. I don't like that you don't have to curse to be funny.
Yeah.
And I have zero respect for grown-ups who need that out of their comedy.
Yeah.
It's like, you fucking baby. You fucking child. That you can't handle, fuck. Cunt.
Yeah.
Like, those words are like,
It's like a sharp knife. They're like, oh, God, you're cutting me with your cutting
sports. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'd be one thing. I get time and a place. It'd be one thing if, like, you know, Stephen King was showing up to your kids' Sunday school. And be like, what are these fucking little cunts doing here learning about Jesus? Why don't you fucking get their little fucking silly ass fucking cocks out of here? Then you'd be like, Jesus, Stephen. Come on.
I'd pay to see that. I think that'd be hilarious.
It would be fun to see that. But I get where it's like, you know, like I'm bothered when I'm out with my wife and kids at like a restaurant and the table next to us is just on a fuck parade. And I'm like, really? Come on. Here? You know? Yeah. I mean, if I go to Denny's, then I'm like, well, you get what you get.
Yeah.
You know,
it comes with every stack of pancakes. Right.
But like for like, you know, stand up or like literature, especially when it's a character, it's not like Stephen King is the narrator in these books, or even is a narrator. But it's not like there's a narrator going, so then these two fucking shits here get scared of fucking Pennywise, motherfucker, because this clown is no fucking shit scary. You know what I mean, motherfucker? It's like, it's, you know, that would be like...
I kind of want it to be like that and have it as Larry the Cable Guy. Tell
Larry the Cable Guy tells King. It. But it's like, it's always the character, you know? And it's like, well, if the character is some Bangor, Maine, you know, blue-collar worker... You know, he's not going to be like, well, hello there, Ethel. Welcome to the, you know, place of business that you've come to. I like your dress. You seem very nice this afternoon. You know, it's like.
Yeah, it's like the book's not the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like B. Yeah,
I used to always joke with people when I was in film school that, you know, when something was rated R, it stood for reality.
Oh, that's
okay.
Great.
So, that's a good one.
Because that is like, a good one.
It's like sometimes, there's going to be those that are just out there. Like Pineapple Express is not based on reality necessarily.
Right.
But there's plenty of those that, like, I had gotten into an argument with my parents one time about Spotlight this last year.
Okay.
And I was like, it's rated R, but every single thing they went through in that was fucking published. Like, it's not, like, that is what was said. That's what happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can't. you know, turn around and edit that just because somebody might feel bad about it.
Right.
That hurts the story.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I don't like is like when people have an aversion to reality where they just don't want like the truth to be the truth. It's like, well, you just want to live in some weird fairy tale where everybody's like some 1950s father knows best kind of, you know, weird reality, like what are the Stepford Wife kind of.
Welcome to Utah.
I'm sure there is that culture here. Oh, yeah.
That's 90% of the culture here.
Yeah.
It is. That is fascinating me. Like,
You made a remark last night where you said something about the Amish, and all that went through my head was, or just Utah.
I thought this was interesting. Misery was almost turned into a Broadway play with Julia Roberts as Annie. But King actually vetoed that idea because Annie, in his words...
That would have been the weirdest fucking Broadway play ever.
Julia Roberts, you cock-a-doodle.
Yeah. That would be kind of funny.
He couldn't see her doing that because a brawny woman could sling a guy around, not a pixie. Was a direct quote from King.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
There's also that guy who went mad in a hotel nearby quote is a reference to The Shining as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of shared. All of his are usually shared.
Well, I do love that. I love his Dark Tower series.
Read any of that. And now that the show is in production, I'm like, I've got to get on this.
It's a big commitment, but it's so good. Roland the Gunslinger is like such a great character. But he ties he makes constant references to kind of some of the other characters from the other worlds of his books. But what a career that guy! What an amazing career!
Yeah.
You know, like it is being, you know, obviously like the theatrical release is being worked on.
Yeah, and that new Pennywise looks terrifying.
I love the new look of it too. Oh,
yeah, me too. And then just how many movies have been made of his stuff, and how many like, and I love even like the non horror ones like Hearts in Atlantis and
a great
one
too.
And like Stand By Me.
Sam Raimi's fucking classic.
Yeah, it's crazy. That was King, you know, a Shawshank Redemption's King.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just how prolific he's been. Like, yeah, no, he's actually, it's like, I've referenced him in a couple different bits over the years, like, as like just my own little homage, because he is my favorite, like, creator, I guess, just that I, you know, when I was a kid, the first book series I got into was Stephen King.
Yeah. I just noticed it was quickly different.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. That was it. I mean, I'd just be a big Stephen King fan.
We should probably get our last one, The Big Lebowski, the big 1998 cult classic.
Yeah, I do a bit now about
that. 98?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's early Coen Brothers.
Yeah. I do a bit actually. I'm working on right now about just what people are able to hate about how people have given like a 1-star Amazon reviews to The Big Lebowski, which just invalidates reviews to me. You know, where it's like because that movie is so. So well put together, just well written, and so like just so fascinating, like creatively, like the way it was done. Like, sorry, I got distracted in my head as I'm thinking about it. I remember I just learned something new about that movie recently, where Jeff Daniels was talking about how he was able to bring his family to set for like 1 or 2 days. I think just like 1 day. So anyway, he brings his family is set, but then he realizes on the shooting schedule that the day that his, like, and it was like his girls, I think 2 girls, and they're, you know, in school still, so they're younger. And it was when they're going to shoot the scene where he's having the weird dream sequence and he's floating underneath all those waitresses with the skirts.
Yeah.
You know, and looking up their skirts. And I guess the cast or whatever decided to mess with him on top of that. And during that scene, supposedly, these women wore these merkins like over their panties, so like look like pubic hair. And as he's going underneath the women, the each woman gets progressively more hairy, these huge bushes and stuff. I think it was on Conan. I think it's like there's a Conan clip on YouTube where you can find him talking about that. But yeah, but that movie was just so good. Where John Goodman is my favorite John Goodman role.
Oh, yeah, that's his favorite movie.
Is it really?
Yeah, that he did.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Walter, it's like that's such a quirky. I love the layers to their characters.
Yeah.
Like, I love how Walter is a Vietnam vet who converted to Judaism later in life for a girl who he's no longer with. And then I love that his friends don't buy that he's Jewish, but he, like, when he goes off about, like, it's Shabbos! It's Shabbos! You know, like all these crazy references. And I love the weird, like, theories that are out there about the movie that, like, Steve Buscemi's Donnie character is supposedly not even real. Like, that, like, some people joke around that, like, what if the director is like, he's just a figment of Walter's imagination.
Oh, I like that. That's,
yeah, because I haven't studied that one, but somebody was claiming that like nobody else directly interacts with Donnie. Like, it's always Walter.
True,
yeah.
Actually, once you think about it.
Right, right. That he's the only one, and it never like goes anywhere. So like it's almost like Donnie is just in Walter's head.
Well, it's like that weird theory that like Ferris Bueller, like he's the,
yeah, he's just Cameron's alter ego.
Oh, yeah. That's like a a Fight Club type thing.
Yeah,
yeah, that's,
yeah,
interesting.
He's his what is Tyler Durden?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's hilarious. Oh, but yeah, man. but I love like and just Walter's just shut the fuck up, Donnie. One of my favorite scenes in there is when he has told Donnie to shut the fuck up just immediately whenever Donnie's tried to pipe in. Probably 5 or 6 times during the movie. And then Donnie finally has something legitimate to add to the conversation. And he just, but his instinct, he just goes, shut the fuck up. No, wait, what? Like, he just, I love how he just leads with whenever that guy talks, he just tells him to shut the fuck up.
So they did that because in Fargo, Steve Buscemi's character was overly chatty.
Oh, so I did read that,
yeah,
too. Yeah.
So they're like, they told him, like, shut the fuck up. It was kind of a nice callback to that.
That is, oh, I love when people do that. Oh, they marry their, like Stephen King we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Combine their worlds. And I love my favorites. You know, I work with a guy. I've hosted a couple shows randomly for Playboy, which is a whole other weird topic. But like, one of the producers I work with, this guy is, his name is Larry, and so we quote that movie all the time. Where we're like, "This is what happens, Larry, when you try to fuck a stranger in the ass." And I love
that scene.
I love that scene where, first off, it's a kid.
Yeah.
That he's saying this to.
He hands the homework in a baggie, like.
This proof, and then I love when he smashes that car and it's some other dude. Oh, it's just there's so, and Jeff Daniels' character is so great, where he's just a dipshit, really. Like,
yeah.
The dude is not a fucking
Jeff
good
Bridges.
Guy. Oh God, I keep saying Jeff Daniels. I always interchange,
yeah,
those. Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff. So retract all the Jeff Daniels references and replace them with Jeff Bridges. But I do that all the time. Like those names are like interchangeable in my brain for some reason. But Jeff Bridges, when he's his character is just. Just a loser.
Yeah.
Like, just a loser. But I love how, like, as dumb, or as not dumb, but, well, he is kind of dumb.
Just very lackadaisical.
Very lackadaisical.
Yeah.
And actually not super intelligent, because I love whenever he talks smart in the movie, it's usually a reference to something that happened in the background of a previous scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, George Bush is giving that one speech in that scene, and then later he's like, man, this aggression will not stand, man.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's just regurgitating some shit he heard before. But yeah, I just love that Walter is even worse than he is. Like, as bad as the choices he makes, Walter is consistently bringing him into worse choices. And
I need to do that as a costume for Halloween. I feel
Walter?
Like, yeah, I feel like I can pull off
God,
that,
would be good. That
so well.
I'd get you a toe. I'd get you a toe by noon. Yeah.
This is what I got stoned one of my first, like, it's probably like the 5th time I saw this movie. I got stoned, and I was like, what if, like, Lebowski, like, the dude is really just Jesus, and he's lazy, and his dad pays his rent, and he doesn't want everybody to call him a Jesus. He's like, I'm just the dude. Just call me the dude.
Oh, right, right, right. Cause, yeah, because you never know what he – because that is a big curiosity, that movie.
Yeah.
It's like, how does he have a place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He writes a check for 69 cents for his creeper.
right.
It's great. I love that ferret scene, too. They just throw a ferret into the tub with him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's
when those,
really
when the nihilist fucking break in. Yeah. I love the camera. I love the small role from Flea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That entire era, it seems like, from late 80s to late 90s was very much just, hey, can we throw Flea in here?
Yeah. Flea wants a part.
Yeah.
I love the, because with Jeff Bridges, too, he would ask right before they would film, like, is a dude, did you think he burned one up before he came to go do this?
Right.
And if they
said
yeah, he would take his knuckles and rub them in his eyes to get his eyes all bloodshot.
That, I love that commitment.
Yeah, it's fucking way method. I don't see you doing
which is
Daniel
funny
Day
because
Lewis.
Having briefly met Jeff Bridges once,
yeah,
he very much is the dude.
Wow.
Like, oh, yeah.
That's just his personality very, very much.
Oh, yeah. He plays it so smooth, too.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. He's just laid back and just like, yeah, just you know, the dude or the dudeliness. Hey, just don't call me Mr. Lebowski.
Yeah.
He ends up saying the only time he says his name, like, I'm Jeffrey Lebowski, is at the end at the mortuary where they're picking up, you know, what's his face? Steve Buscemi's ashes. Blanking on his name right now.
Donnie,
yes.
Yeah.
Which I thought, like, I didn't even remember that, so I had to go back and, like, rewatch that scene. I'm like, holy shit, they actually did say.
So I know, like, one thing I didn't even notice until, like, I looked up the facts is that Lebowski is in every scene of the movie, no matter what.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't caught that either. Yeah, I mean, I know it's like it follows him, but I didn't realize he was in every scene.
Yeah, like one part that I guess they were, when it's an establishing shot, you can see like John Goodman's van in the background.
Okay.
So it's like one of those you have to go rewatch.
Yeah, that's cool. Like, I love those attention to detail.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Coens are good at that. They're good at just
really
kind of sneaking in those little things.
Layers. And the dudes are real good. I know the Lebowski character is based on somebody the Coen brothers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, known in real life.
I also just love Julianne Moore's character, too.
Yeah, that was like the peak of Julianne Moore's. She's still a beautiful woman.
Oh, yeah.
But that was like her peak as far as, you know, like she's so. I mean, she's a great actress.
Yeah.
And so. I don't know, it's classically gorgeous, is that the right way to describe it?
Yeah,
but just,
it's around that time, what was it, Boogie Nights, was
that
around those?
Yeah.
She did a bunch of stuff. I mean, she did that one with, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, that she's still pretty great in.
Oh,
The one where he's, like, addicted to porn?
Oh, I never saw that.
That one was actually pretty good, actually.
Don Julio.
Yes,
I like him.
Don Julio.
Yes.
Don Julio. Like whiskey?
I think my favorite part of just the whole Big Lebowski essence is just his whole. He has a nemesis, which is the Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my God, the Rounders guy, Totoro.
Yeah,
that guy. I love. Yeah, that's a weird character.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody fucks with the Jesus.
Oh, it's absurd.
Yeah.
Should be with the ball.
Yeah, it's such a weird. I think
they're talking about a spinoff series about him.
I can see that.
I saw that on like Variety or something this last week.
That's funny. I mean, yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Well, there's a part where it flashes back to him, like, being a registered sex offender going door to door.
Yeah, it's like a weird character.
Yeah. They said, like, to make his, because they wanted his bulge to be more bigger, they put a bag of bird seed in his pants. Give off that effect.
That is funny.
It's Coen Brothers, their attention to detail. Like, I need a bigger bulge.
No more bulge.
Give me some
Jesus.
Fucking bird seed.
Yeah.
I know, I used it in high school to get blades. Seat is legit. Well, as we wrap up, first I want to thank you for doing the show.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
So much fun, and that's what I love about this, is getting people, a lot of fans like myself, is like, what are some of these people's favorite movies?
Cool, yeah, no, it's fun, man. It's fun to talk about movies you love.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you, follow the great stuff you're doing?
Yeah, dancummins.tv, links to all my social media. And, you know, if you just Google Dan Cummins, that's where they find iTunes and everything, all the albums. And then TimeSuckPodcast.com is the new, but that's on iTunes and Stitcher and all those places as well. And, I guess that's it.
And you release those once a week, right? With the time
Yeah, every Monday. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a great podcast. I love it.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm trying to keep it. I know people who like podcasts already usually have their plates full because they listen to so many. So I'm doing my best to keep it close to a half an hour each. With mine, just to kind of like, just like a little baby, podcast, you can squeeze it in your podcast schedule.
And which I appreciate. That was one of the things I told Christopher when we had talked about it, is that it was short enough that it did fit right in. So always list off. Oh, you can listen to this podcast, do this one too. And I'm like, they're like hour and a half episodes. Like I can't.
It's hard to add a lot.
I can't add it anymore. Yeah, yours was the perfect amount.
Oh, that's
of
nice. Yeah. Well, I listen to those Dan Carlin's like hardcore history sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, this is a commitment. This is a 5-hour podcast.
Oh, shit.
Jeez.
Yeah. And sometimes there are multiple. Sometimes, you know, it's like they'll talk about the Mongol Empire or whatever. And in totality, you know, if you listen to all 4 episodes to get that full story, it's like, you know, 11 hours or something. And it's like, jeez, I can't commit that much.
That's like Will Sasso has his 10-minute podcast.
Oh, that's interesting. 10 minutes. Wow.
They've been doing it for like 3-4 years, and it's hilarious. They used to do it with the Chris D'Elia, and then Brian Callen would use.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah.
The things that they do in 10 minutes, fucking hilarious.
That's awesome.
It's good about you. That's why I like yours. It's like you pack all that great information in it. You still have fun with it, but at the same time, it's like, holy shit, it was only a half hour.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah,
thanks,
like
yeah.
But yeah, we'll definitely we'll post that and definitely get people to listen to Time Suck.
And of course, go buy the new album.
Yeah, of course. Please get Don't Wake the Bear. People seem to like it. So
yeah,
great.
If you have not gotten it, fucking get it now.
Thanks.
All right, thanks so much.
Thanks.